Prepare to be astonished!
It's that time again.
Let's get started.
From the Clatsop County Historical Society, an adventure in history with Matt Burns and Alana Quila.
You should never be allowed to talk to people.
Some people without brains do an awful lot of talking.
And now, with today's adventure, it's Mac and Alana.
Welcome back to an adventure in history. How's it going? It's holiday weekends.
It's all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
Memorial Day.
Yep.
We didn't talk about the Mother's Day tea and scones.
Oh, true.
We didn't talk about the Fort George Brewery Lupulin Ecstasy Festival on the grounds of the Flavel House.
Which was wonderful.
It was. It was packed. Over 700 people.
Oh, I love that. And the weather was perfect.
Every event they ever do, it seems like it's good weather.
Except for dark weather arts, which is also perfect, right?
I think they order that.
Yep.
So and we're in the midst of almost Goonies Day.
I love it. And tomorrow's my daughter's birthday. Happy birthday, Carly.
Oh, my goodness.
She was not born on Memorial Day.
I was going to say, Memorial Day changes every year.
It does. So but her birthday always falls around the weekend, which is kind of fun, right?
So wow.
We always get a three-day weekend.
Yeah. She thinks it's just for her, I bet.
Right, right.
All of America celebrates with a three-day weekend for my birthday.
It's fun, for sure.
And how old this year?
Eight. 8 years old.
That's crazy.
It is. I know. I was telling somebody, too, the other day, like, the difference between seven and eight. I mean, seven still just sounds young, right? Mm-hmm. But eight doesn't. I mean, to say I have an eight-year-old, I mean, I don't know. It just sounds different.
It's because they're on the cusp of double digits.
Right. And seven could still be, like, they're just little. She's not little anymore.
Well, she's still in the good age.
She is.
See, I like from, like, three or four.
Yep.
Maybe even down to two, depending on the kid, to like 11, 12. And then they start becoming teenagers.
Yep. Then we get dumber.
Yeah, exactly.
It turns, though. It turns a corner. Right, mom and dad?
And see, that's why my wife and I always joke, middle school, that's why they segregate them into middle school, because that's like the worst age.
Because you don't want any other kids seeing them. And they come out and they go into high school.
So Goonies Day is, of course, June 7th is the day the movie was released. But because it's a Wednesday, all the shenanigans will be happening from June 2nd through the 7th.
Fun.
And this is an off year. This is the 38th anniversary. So not a big deal. But you can come by the Oregon Film Museum and get the Oregonian Challenge.
I like that.
38 things that we suggest you do. And if you do 10 of them, you can come back and get the commemorative button.
That's so fun.
And that's the only way you can get the commemorative button.
And they're fun, easy things, too.
Oh, easy things. Like, I mean, the first one is visit the film museum.
Right.
So if you go to the film museum to get the booklet, you've already done one of the items.
I like it.
And then the second item, we keep these ones the same every year. We mix them up. We've been doing it. This will be the third time we've done it. The second item is take a selfie with the Jeep out front.
Perfect.
So you can get two of them
right away.
There.
Yep, not very far.
But one of the new things that the esteemed Julie Kovach has pointed out to us is, technically speaking, Mikey's dad is the curator of the local museum, mm-hmm. and in the movie, technically speaking, that would be the Flavel House.
Yep.
So we're going to have a picnic on the grounds Sunday afternoon.
I love it.
We're not providing anything.
Okay,
we're just inviting
everybody
to come and have a picnic on the grounds. Bring your stuff and a picnic.
What a great idea.
And we're going to have some chalk and encourage some chalk art on the sidewalks between the Flavel House and the Film Museum. And there may even be a prize for the best chalk Goonies-related drawing.
I love it. Like a Babe Ruth.
Maybe.
Or a couple.
No, usually our prizes are $50 bills.
Oh.
Because $50.
I was always surprised that the house has become so much more popular than the Flavel House. Because
of course.
I mean, you say that, but because it's Goonieville, is that why? I mean, I just think of the Flavel House, the museum. I mean, the whole point of the movie is because of an artifact.
But you don't see the Flavel House,
don't you?
You just see the front, the flagpole. As the kids are riding the bikes down the hill, the dad is raising the flag of the flagpole.
That's it.
So you barely see the front of the house because we were painting and the house was surrounded by scaffolding.
Oh, my goodness.
Had we not had scaffolding, you know the cinematographer would have been, let's pan up the tower. That's a great looking building.
It's beautiful.
And then we would have been far more iconic.
Yes.
So that's why
timing.
It's just a little bit of a, well.
That's funny because in my mind, I picture the Flavel house, but I guess, yeah.
And the chase scene is each corner of the property. But again, they make sure you don't see the Flavel house.
Oh my goodness. Who was the director at that time?
Who would have ever guessed? Although you kind of should have because you knew Spielberg. By that point, people know who Richard Donner is. I mean, he'd done Superman,
right.
So
it was going to be a big movie.
Yeah, so you kind of knew it was going to be a big deal.
I'm surprised. Okay, well, there we go.
So, but I do have some a new segment, and you invented a new segment with words.
I did,
but you've forgotten already.
I have.
So I'm introducing a new segment on the big show, History Humor.
Ooh, because this is new to you.
Yes. So, what's a pirate's favorite letter? That's a good guess, but no, it's a writ of safe passage from His Majesty, King Charles II of England. Come on, that's clever.
Yeah.
Favorite letter.
You just wanted me to say that.
So
I was going to say that's a good dad joke.
That's our new, is it a dad joke though?
Well, yes.
That part is funny. Yes, that's a dad joke, but I was about to say, would Carly get that?
Not at all. Not at all.
Because I suspect there's a lot of adults that don't find the humor in that.
Still trying to figure out what you just said.
All right. Shall we get to the big history highlights? So these are things, these are icebreakers. These are conversation starters.
Fun ones today.
For those that might have social anxiety and don't know how to initiate a conversation.
Right.
Perhaps one of these could help. For tomorrow, of course, May 29th, 1765.
Ooh.
Patrick Henry's historic speech against the Stamp Act. Answering a cry of treason when he was given a speech, somebody yelled out treason, and he replied, "If this be treason, make the most of it." I like that.
That's
Patrick
a good
Henry.
Line. Yeah.
He's a little bit of a troublemaker.
Yeah.
1848, Wisconsin enters the Union.
Welcome to the party.
Wisconsin, that's where I was born.
Ooh, 30th state.
Oh, you knew that.
Yep, I had that one.
Head.
I did not know off the top of my head.
See, if I was ever going to run for president, do you think like Wisconsin would own me that like he was born here, even though I only lived there for 3 years?
No.
You don't think they'd be like, our favorite son, run for president.
Depends how much money you have.
That's true. 1912, 15 young women are fired by the Curtis Publishing Company in Philadelphia. You want to know why?
I do.
Because during their lunch break, they were dancing the turkey trot. Scandalous. 1912.
Jeez.
So let that be a lesson. Do not do the turkey trot on your lunch breaks.
In 1912. If you're a woman.
That's true. If you're a woman.
There's the caveat. Yes.
Yeah. 1917. It's a good warning in case like anybody invents a time machine and they intend on being a woman in 1912 and dancing the turkey trot. They will lose their job. 1917. John F. Kennedy is born.
Yeah.
1919. Charles Strite files a patent for the automatic pop-up toaster.
Ooh, that's fun.
It makes it so much easier to toast.
It does.
Although I hate when it doesn't come all the way up.
Right. I know. They didn't. I mean, why didn't they just make that button that goes up higher?
Exactly.
Come on, folks.
For English muffins and for bagels sometimes.
Anything.
Very
yeah.
difficult. Well, toast is usually big enough.
I guess.
Not a big toast fan?
I don't know. I mean, no.
You know, Jerry Seinfeld's making a movie about Pop-Tarts.
Is he?
He loves Pop-Tarts, so he's like doing a whole How Pop-Tarts Were Invented movie.
Oh, interesting.
I'm very anxious to see it.
Okay, a movie about nothing.
Speaking of toasters, let's see. 1953, Edmund Hillary and Tenzing Norgay reached the Everest summit.
That's pretty cool.
You know, I kind of hate that Norgay doesn't get more attention because I really suspect he did most of the work.
Probably.
1979, Woody Harrelson's father is arrested for murder.
I saw that, but I didn't read. What did you deep dive that to?
I see. Don't because I kind of knew a little bit about
okay.
it. He was like a mafia hitman.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I feel badly because we shouldn't denigrate Woody Harrelson. It's not his fault who his dad is.
Right.
But
well, he did okay.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Anyway, but yeah, his dad was like.
Hitman, okay.
Killing somebody for hire or something. I don't know the full story, so I may have just totally misspoke. but it's kind of my bad memory.
Interesting.
But our history highlight of the day, thing I think had the most impact on history, 1787, the Virginia Plan. James Madison and Edmund Randolph proposed to the Constitutional Convention advocating for a national government with, hold on, get it, wait for it here, with three branches, legislative, executive, and judicial.
Yep.
What a great idea.
It is a good idea.
We should embrace that as a form of government.
We're still working on it.
Well, I always do like when people say the great American experiment.
Yeah, it's a work in progress. Yeah.
It is. And that's why we make amendments to the Constitution.
Right. And I was going to just say, it should be evolving too, right? I mean, women could not do the foxtrot or turkey trot.
Turkey trot. I don't know. 1912. Maybe they could do the foxtrot.
You missed a big one, though.
Oh, what I missed.
Oh, my goodness. May 29th, 1851. The formerly enslaved woman, Sojourner Truth, rises to speak and assert her right to equality as a woman and as well as a Black American. The exact wording of her speech on that day, which becomes famous for the refrain, "Ain't I a woman?" has been lost to history because there's a little argument about whether that was exactly what she said or not.
The whole speech or the "Ain't I a woman?"
Ain't I a woman.
Ain't I a woman?
Which is the phrase that people have repeated over and over. So there's some just debate about whether that was ever said, if it was said during that speech, or if it was just written down. But regardless, even if she didn't say it, if that's the phrase or that was the takeaway from it, it still has just as much of an impact, right?
But I like that you can say that a lot of different ways.
Yes, you can.
Ain't I a woman?
Yes.
Ain't I a woman?
Yes.
Ain't I a woman? I wish I had a recording because I'd like to know where the emphasis was.
Right. So, yeah, that was at the Ohio Women's Rights Convention. So, again, wow. May 29th.
And I would like to know how many Black people versus how many white people there. You know, did they segregate against her? And she's like, hold on a minute.
Right. It is 1851.
Or was there a considerable population? And they were like, okay, yeah, we're all in this together.
Right.
Because we're all women.
Yeah.
Interesting. Same. That is a good one.
That was a good one. And then there was a fun one. The American singer and actor Bing Crosby recorded the holiday classic White Christmas on this day in 1942.
I ignored this because we did a whole show on
that song. We did. So you can go back because it was a White Christmas, like little known facts. And they were fun, right? They were interesting ones. You're still giggling about it.
I saw that, because I thought of you when I saw it.
Yeah, and then you ignored it.
Because that was a show you put together.
Yep, that was a good one.
Because sometimes it's a team effort, sometimes it's a me effort, sometimes it's a you effort.
Exactly.
So, speaking of that, this is a show also that is not specific to Clatsop County. And I don't know what rabbit hole I was going down that got me on this subject. But we're going to talk about book banning.
Because it affects everyone.
It does affect everyone. And I'm always shocked at what are you so afraid of?
Correct, yeah.
So book banning can be traced back to the end of the Han Dynasty in 221 BCE.
So shouldn't that say something?
Isn't it amazing?
Like, shouldn't we move on? Yes. 221.
It has not worked, obviously.
Right.
So this oldest recorded case of book burning in a Chinese library signified a future of political censorship and suppression. Many centuries later, around the time of religious persecution during the Reformation, censorship began to come in increased waves, sprouting fear and stricter control. In the United States, Uncle Tom's Cabin was the first book to experience a nationwide ban. All copies of the novel were banned from stores by the Confederacy. This led to a great insurgence in political involvement in literature.
Another example was the Comstock Law. This law was advocated by Anthony Comstock, who convinced the American Congress to prohibit the mailing and publication of what he considered to be pornographic material, meaning anatomy textbooks, pamphlets about reproduction, the Canterbury Tales, and any works by Oscar Wilde. This practice of censorship became known as Comstockery.
And see, I knew about the Comstock Law and that it was pornography being mailed, but I didn't know the specifics of what he was against.
And that's a wide...
anatomy books.
Right, yeah. And pamphlets about reproduction. that I guess we're not going to give women, right, that are having babies. Yeah. From the 1920s onward, American politics noticed a shift in control. Beginning with the achievements in voting rights for women, people began to advocate more for the freedom of reading without limitations and control. This led to one of the most influential literary court cases of American history, the United States versus one book called Ulysses. This legal case in 1933 resulted in the overturning of a federal ban of James Joyce's Ulysses, which had been banned 11 years prior, dismantling the strict control on literature that the nation once held.
And of course, a worldwide instance of censorship through literature was during the reign of Nazi leader Adolf Hitler. In 1933, in Munich, Germany, Hitler's regime burned 25,000 books.
Heartbreaking.
Because of their un-German qualities. Through this, Hitler attempted to eliminate dissenting views that could challenge his power of authority and control of his nation. Throughout all these historical examples, it is clear that the original purpose of book banning stemmed from a fear of change in social order and political voice. It was a way for leaders to control and marginalize the views of minority groups in society. What you so afraid of?
Restricting access, right, to those who cannot afford to find it elsewhere.
That's right. So we thought we'd share some examples of some specific works and why they were banned or why they were attempted to be banned.
So Charlotte's Web was banned in Kansas because talking animals are blasphemous. Talking animals is a recurring motif in a number of children's books ranging from Winnie the Pooh to Charlotte's Web. The latter offers a touching, heroic story of a talking pig whose life is saved by a talking spider. While talking farm animals are certainly key to why the book and its animated film adaptation have proven so enduringly popular, they have also been the source of significant criticism. Indeed, in 2006, a parents group in Kansas raised an outcry and demanded the book be banned because of its inclusion of animals who could speak. The group called this particular form of
anthropomorphism
was blasphemous. Humans are the highest level of God's creation, are the only creatures that communicate vocally. Showing lower life forms with human abilities is sacrilegious and disrespectful.
What about talking parrots?
To God.
Speaking of pirates.
Well, and again, it is also fiction.
Yes. Okay, so I didn't decide that we were going to keep score here. But
yeah.
Have you read Charlotte's Web?
Of course.
All right,
yes.
As have I. Alice's Adventures in Wonderland was banned in China because of talking animals.
Oh, interesting.
Lewis Carroll looms large in the field of children's literature. His novel, Alice's Adventures in Wonderland, which focuses on the title character as she tumbles into a strange world, has been adapted into films numerous times, including by none other than Walt Disney. Despite, or perhaps because of its popularity and influence, the tale has endured its fair share of criticism and attempts to ban it. Many stem from its depiction of drug use by certain characters, but some bans have also come from a more unexpected source, the depiction of talking animals. Mm. Most notably, the novel was banned in China's Hunan province in 1931.
Huh.
The governor of the province went on the record stating animals should not use human language. It was disastrous to put animals and human beings on the same level.
Interesting. Yeah, I would have thought for the drug use. But again, like when kids are reading it, they, you know, you can't tell.
Exactly. And we've both read it, I assume.
Yes.
Okay.
Winnie the Pooh was banned in China because the character supposedly mocked Xi Jinping. Winnie the Pooh is possibly the most famous bear in the history of fiction, first appearing in the series of novels by British author A.A. Milne. The stuffed bear and companion of Christopher Robin would go on to become a worldwide phenomenon, thanks in large part to Walt Disney's adaptations of Milne's stories. In addition to the original book series, Pooh has appeared in numerous films, TV series, and other media. However, not everyone is enamored of the bear with the little brain as audiences in the U.S. and Europe. In fact, he's been banned in China. In this case, the ban seems to stem from the unfavorable comparisons by many people, both within China and outside of it, have drawn between the portly bear and Chinese political leader Xi Jinping. Probably saying that incorrectly, sorry. According to experts, the Chinese...
If he's listening, we apologize.
Right. The Chinese government views such comparisons as a serious effort to undermine the dignity of the presidential office and Xi himself. Any media involving the honey-loving bear, including the recent film Christopher Robin, are banned, as well as any other websites that invoke the comparison, including HBO, after John Oliver compared Xi and Pooh. Which didn't help the case, right?
They kind of do look alike. A little bit. All right. The Wonderful Wizard of Oz was banned because of its depiction of women in strong leadership roles.
Oh, my goodness.
I've never actually read the book.
That's true. No, I probably haven't done that one either.
Even before it was adapted into the beloved musical, The Wizard of Oz, starring Judy Garland as the protagonist, the novel The Wonderful Wizard of Oz by L. Frank Baum had achieved significant success as well as antipathy. At first glance, the story about a farm girl whisked to Oz by a tornado wouldn't seem to have much objectionable material. For the public libraries of Chicago, however, it was dangerous for creating an ungodly influence by depicting women in strong leadership roles. This wouldn't be the last time the novel faced backlash from educators and other public figures, particularly in the 1950s and 60s. In Florida.
Of course.
How many times is Florida going to come up?
I know.
In Florida, a teacher decried the book for its unwholesome impact on young readers. Challenges persisted until the 1980s when a high-profile protest by a group of Christians denounced the story's depiction of good witches.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. James and the Giant Peach was banned in Wisconsin because the spider licking her lips was deemed too sexual.
Oh, my.
Many works of British author Ronald Dahl have become part of children's literature canon, from Charlie and the Chocolate Factory to Matilda. And given the extent to which his books often engage with dark thematic material, it's not surprising they have faced criticism and attempts to ban them. This includes James and the Giant Peach, which, as the title suggests, focuses on a boy who goes on a fantastical journey aboard a giant peach with a group of insects and arachnids. Charming and at times disturbing, these creepy crawly characters have often become the source of disgruntlement. The spider in particular earned the ire of a small town in Wisconsin. In 1986, residents disapproved of the way Dahl described the spider licking her lips, arguing that the scene could be read in a sexual light and was thus inappropriate for children. Specifically, the concerns that her lip licking could be taken in different ways, including sexual.
Really?
I know, that we go.
I would be more in line with, okay, a little scary.
Right. I was going to say his books are dark, but again, I don't know that children necessarily pick up on the darkness as much.
Flying monkeys in Wizard of Oz continue to haunt my dreams.
Well, and Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, too, is a little terrifying, right?
Yes, I mean, Little Red Riding Hood was banned in a California school because of an illustration showed Little Red carrying a bottle of wine.
Ooh.
Fairy tales are some of the most powerful and ubiquitous elements of popular culture. Although many have deep roots in various societies, they often appear in new versions in films, TV series, and books. Every version brings something new to these established stories, not all of which are greeted warmly by the public. Little Red Riding Hood, for example, the story of a little girl whose visit to her grandmother goes dreadfully awry when she encounters a human-eating wolf, has come in for some criticism, although not from the direction one might expect. Again, like being chased by a wolf and eating grandma, you know. Culver City Unified School District in California, for example, took exception to a new illustrated version's inclusion of a bottle of wine among the treats the title character takes to her homebound grandmother. School board president Linda Price rationalized the book was not included in the series that was recommended because its message was inconsistent with our program against substance abuse. It says drinking wine makes one feel better. While many other people in the community, including school teachers, disagreed with the decision, the book remained on the banned list.
The American Heritage Dictionary is banned in cities throughout the U.S. because of its dirty words. Dictionaries are an indispensable part of a school classroom, even at the age of the internet, when it becomes simple to find the definition of a word by looking it up online. Certain dictionaries remain a key part of the American cultural landscape. However, even the American Heritage Dictionary's position as one of the most trusted and established research volumes hasn't kept it from being challenged over objectionable material. In fact, the dictionary has been removed from many libraries throughout the latter half of the 20th century. 1976, it was banned in school libraries in both Anchorage, Alaska and Cedar Lake, Indiana. Certain schools in Missouri and California followed, as did a ban in Nevada somewhat later. In the case of Churchill County, Nevada, however, the removal was ultimately rescinded.
It's the dictionary.
I know.
Tarzan was banned because people believed Tarzan and Jane were living together unmarried. In many ways, Tarzan is the typical wild man trapped in the jungle and raised by apes. He would go on to star in the series of novels that bear his name, written by Edgar Rice Burroughs. The Ape Man would also appear in a number of movies, including an animated version by Walt Disney and a live-action adventure movie starring Alexander Skarsgård. Actually, there's been a whole bunch of them. Maybe it's because of the Bo Derek version.
Ooh.
Maybe that's why. As entertaining and popular as the character was, however, he did run afoul of censors in Downey, California. Although the series at times can be violent, it wasn't this aspect that aroused their ire. Instead, it was the relationship between Tarzan and his love interest, Jane. Because there's no textual evidence that Jane and Tarzan marrying before they started living together in the jungle, many people objected to this glamorous representation of illicit relations. Well, if there's nobody to marry them, should they have had like a fake ceremony with an ape?
It's fiction.
Yeah, fiction.
You know, they're living in the wilds. Where the Wild Things Are was banned because it frightened adults. Kind of like that title right there.
I agree with that one.
Since its publication in 1963, Maurice Sendak's Where the Wild Things Are has become one of the most beloved children's books. In the story, a boy named Max wreaks havoc in his mother's house and, after being sent to bed without dinner, is magically transported to an island inhabited by monsters. He soon establishes himself as their ruler, but after growing tired of their company, returns to his own room. Like many other popular children's books, it has received its fair share of criticism from adults who see it as too dark for some youth. However, many of the attempts to ban the book have come from adults who were themselves frightened by its engagement with darker thematic material. It was particularly banned in the American South. Bruno Bettelheim, writing in the Ladies' Home Journal, criticized Sendak for failing to understand the incredible fear it evokes in a child to be sent to bed without supper, and this by the first and foremost giver of food and security, his mother. Others, however, were more sanguine, with a Cleveland newspaper wryly noting, "Boys and girls may have to shield their parents from this book. Parents are easily scared."
That was a scary book to me.
See, it was to me too, but you know what I did? Mm-hmm. I didn't read it to my child.
Yes, there you go.
So,
Harry Potter, we knew that would be on this list, was banned because religious groups felt the books would lead kids into the occult. Few fantasy books have achieved the level of mainstream success as the Harry Potter series, with its tale about a young boy who discovers he's a wizard and becomes embroiled in an increasingly violent conflict with the evil wizard
Voldemort,
whose name shall not be mentioned. Voldemort. It hit all emphasis on magic. It hit all the right notes for fans of the genre. Unfortunately, with its emphasis on magic, it soon fell afoul of several religious groups, many of which pressed school boards and libraries to ban it. Evangelical Christians, in particular, objected to the novel's use of the occult. Paul Heitrick of Focus on the Family, for example, argued it contained some powerful and valuable lessons about love and courage and the ultimate victory of good over evil. However... I love that. I mean, that's what it is right there. However, the positive messages are packaged in a medium, witchcraft, that is directly denounced in scripture. In one notable case in Georgia, a concerned parent tried to get the Harry Potter series removed from public schools because the school board refused to do so. It's thus easy to see how the books could become some of the most banned of both the 1990s and 2000s.
So before we end, I am going to say, so the last one on the list is Fahrenheit 451 was banned because it mentions the Bible being burned. So if you haven't read Fahrenheit 451, because I did not until this year, I would definitely recommend it. It's an easy read. It's pretty fast. And I think it's sort of the precursor to so many other books, but it's about burning books.
Yes.
Or burning them and banning them, right? Yes. And then it too was very popular on lots of banned books lists. So it's interesting, right? I mean, it is.
Irony.
Right. I mean...
That's what it's speaking against, and then people
and
still
it's sort of an apocalyptic sort of view of what would happen if we lived in a world like that.
Yeah. So. And there's some other really good books on this list as well.
There are.
We could have kept going, but we're out of time.
Yeah.
So go read a banned book and don't ban books and go make some history. We'll catch you next week. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for joining us for An Adventure in History. An Adventure in History is created and produced by the Clatsop County Historical Society and brought to you by KMUN.